Hello, I'm Alex Saviuk here at Supernova, and you are listening to Behind the Panels.
They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat. Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 80 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm Dave McVeigh.
Dave Wongo.
Hey, he's back.
Hey.
In this issue, the Weinstein Company is developing a Sin City TV series. After Harvey Scissorhands is through with it, it'll just be City. Then Ghost Rider swaps his bike for a car. We assume helmet laws are to blame. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, Green Arrow Quiver by Kevin Smith, Phil Hester and Andy Parks. All this and more after this very important message. This is Behind the Panels.
As evening approaches Toothopolis, so do the cavity creeps.
Oh, no! Cavity creeps!
Hurry, the crest's up.
Crest now. Cavity creeps spotted.
We made holes in teeth.
Crest gel is first. That will fix them.
Repelled by crest gel!
Yay! Crest!
Watch treats.
See your dentist.
And fight the cavity creeps with Crest Gel.
Tastes great.
Fight cavities with Crest.
Behind the Panels, the only comic book podcast that fights cavities.
I used to use Crest when I used to live in the States.
How are we, boys? All back in the same room together.
I know, it's nice. Nice to see you back again. You missed two shows last week.
What are cavities?
They're holes, Dave. They're holes.
Holes in your teeth.
I'm good to be back. Thank you.
Well, look, we've got a very big special this week. Actually, we should say up front, this is the start of our, because we're winding down towards the end of the year, this is the start of our season where we're all doing personal picks. And the first one, of course, because it's my voice you hear first on the show, I get to do the pick this week. And of course, I'm doing a Green Arrow book. I'm doing Green Arrow Quiver. Why not?
And what I think is really interesting is that you've picked a Green Arrow book, absolutely. My pick next week, I pick Power Girl. And yeah, we still don't know.
And I still haven't decided. Well, you guys have done every comic book. That's awesome. Yeah.
you can't see it, but I'm wearing a Green Arrow t-shirt
today.
It's
an awesome t-shirt,
for the thing with the 1970s logo, I should point
out.
Yeah,
no, it's a great. It's a great. It's the classic Green Arrow, too.
Yeah, it's,
his arrow is pointed right at me, actually.
It's a trick arrow, too.
You mean this classic Green Arrow?
What in the name of Robin Hood is going on, anyway?
And I will state, I mean, we'll talk about this more in the pick later, but I could not read this book without hearing that voice.
Oh, look, because that is a retro clip, let us go back. Let's hit up the Wayback Machine, because I'm in a Wayback mood today.
Oh, so am I. It's a very retro book.
It's a very retro book, so let's hit up the Wayback Machine.
2001 is a retro book.
No, style-wise. Stylistically.
Of course.
2001, some of our listeners may not have been born yet. Let's hit the Wayback Machine and go all the way back to 1967 this week.
Oh, groovy.
Why are you holding my son and me and these boys captive?
So that you will not leave this valley and reveal our secret to the outside world.
Now wait a minute.
Place them in the prison hut.
Looks as if our team's behind the eight ball.
And they've taken away Speedy's bow and arrows.
Look, you cover me while I recover his gear. Come on.
Like a streak of eye-blurring scarlet, Kid Flash dashes by and plows through the bewildered mutant men. Then, before they can react, Wonder Girl swoops down out of the sky, diverting them from her teammate.
Mind if I borrow these?
Go, Flasheroo! I'll hold them up!
Now, as Wonder Girl deflects a hail of explosive spears, Kid Flash, vibrating his body's molecules at the speed of light, passes through the stone structure.
What kept you, Twinkle Toes? Yeah, I thought you'd never get here. You may not have needed me if you took better care of your toys. Let's see if you still know how to use them. Watch!
Hurry, Titan, hurry!
One wall-smashing arrow coming up! Let's go, gang!
hey, Flasharoo.
It's got to be the most convoluted plot I've ever heard. Yeah. You do this, well, I do this, and we'll do this together. And we'll...
It was the Teen Titans. They all had to do something to prove that they're being there. I mean, they were so competent that Speedy had lost his toys at some stage, and he couldn't do anything. And he was obviously completely useless without them.
One wall-crashing arrow coming.
Who was Twinkle Toes?
Twinkle Toes was
that the Flash?
Kid Flash. Yeah, okay, Kid Flash. Or yeah, Flasharoo. Yeah.
Flasharoo.
As he was known in those days. That was, of course, Operation Rescue, 1967 from Teen Titans in the Superman Aquaman Hour of Adventure.
Of course it was.
Yeah. I thought you'd know that one, David. It's, I think it's about this time of the week we talk about what we've been reading and watching. So, allons-y.
Where? It's like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
It's French for let's go. We have to talk about, there's a couple of things that we must talk about this week, but one of them, of course, is the end of Infinity. Mm. It's over. It finished.
And there was much rejoicing.
I will.
Oh, a Simpsons reference. I love it.
That's right.
An Al Gore Simpsons reference is what it was.
Mr. Gore, someone's finally read your book.
Look, it's over. And like the last three issues of the book, not a lot happens for the first half of it, and then something does. Mm. And this kind of has a little coda in New Avengers this week, issue talk. This was a book that... It was a six-issue miniseries, but went for like 30 issues.
It feels like it's been going on for the last 10 years of my
life.
What's
because that? Really...
it's
this
called
was,
Infinity, after all.
This was a culmination of like everything that Hickman's been doing up until this point in his
Because
Avengers.
His stuff wasn't complicated enough. He had to spread it out over every book.
It was like, yeah, I'm doing these two books that are completely impenetrable, so let's add in a miniseries to kind of... Because I can't have enough space in these two books to do it. And... You can all join in on the fun too. It's basically what happened with Infinity. Look, it's not a bad... It's what we expected. They beat the bad guy in the end, but not by themselves. They have a bit of help. This is comic books, it's spoilers and all. Thane, son of Thanos, ends up...
Hail Thither.
Hail Thither. Ends up imprisoning Thanos in a kind of living death. let's see how long I can keep that up for. and imprisons him in a kind of living death. So they've got this Thanos trophy in their in their basement now, I
Will
guess.
Will it be a statue?
A statue of Thanos. we apologise. Stop, it'd be Ethereus, yeah. So they've got kind of got him in the basement now while they're hanging out doing their other thing. And they kind of tease it by, like, they've got this other person who's been a bit of a bad guy, big gal, hanging down there for most of this series going, yeah, you've met the builders, but you haven't met the map makers yet. It's like, oh, God, now that's another 3 years of Jonathan Hickman's arc as we're building up to this new thing. And then you get new Avengers.
Well, the builders obviously needed architects.
Yeah. Right? Then we'll have to get the people who are like, you know, but you haven't met the people... in the development planning approval office.
You haven't met the quality control
office yet. Yeah. You haven't met the municipal council. So I can't wait for that. That'll be 10 years down the track in Jonathan Hickman's run when he starts... he is launching Avengers World, so he is going to need planning approval.
I'm really looking forward to the issue where they talk about the building code. You know, it should be a lot of fun.
No, you've been seeing the building code in the back of every issue and there's little symbols all over the place. Look, that was big. It's over. I don't think we need to talk too much about it because it's everywhere on the web. But, like, you know, what did we feel overall? Was it bad?
I think releasing it monthly was a really bad idea.
Yeah.
like if this was just one standalone piece, I think it'd probably work really well.
I'm gonna go one step every further month. And say I think releasing it was a bad idea.
It's not that bad.
I think Hickman needs to pull his head in a little
bit.
Maybe you
need to go into your comic book store, David, and rip up a copy of Infinity in front of the people. Which brings
Nah,
us...
they're too thick, man. There's too many.
I have more luck ripping a phone book, right?
Yeah. Well, which brings us neatly to Pretty Deadly, which some comic book store did that with the first issue.
Mm.
Thought it was a bit extreme because they found the issue to be terrible. I didn't think it was terrible. You didn't think it was terrible. We just thought it was impenetrable.
And I can say that now I've read issue two, I think it's still impenetrable. I don't understand
I don't understand who the characters are. I don't remember any of them. No, I remember who they are and what they look like, but I can't place them from week to week.
It's gorgeous. Oh, the book is...
Emma Rios is
gorgeous.
Is wonderful.
The prose is beautiful. Mm. I mean, the words just flow off your tongue. I just don't understand a word of it.
No, no.
You know? It's like reading Shakespeare for the first time in high school. And you go, huh?
You know? Dylan Thomas. Maybe like Shakespeare, we need to see Pretty Deadly performed rather than read.
Or leave it 100 years and maybe it'll make more sense.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. Look, Kelly Sue is lovely.
Well, when we get you back on for the thousandth episode. Okay. episode 1,000.
This is an open invitation to Kelly Sue to come back and help unravel it.
If you're still listening.
Yeah, if you're still listening. I want to know what it's about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm going to stick with it for the 5 issues, which is that the first arc. Because
she gave us an explanation when we interviewed her, and it made so much sense then.
I might go back and listen to the interview.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it might be the goal.
Because there's like a recap page at the start of issue 2, and I'm like, oh, I don't understand this. I'm having trouble. Look,
the best way to start a comic book.
Give a quick shout-out.
Seems like we're doing that every week now, isn't it? Like,
I just want to give a quick shout-out to 2 other books before we move on to what we've been watching, which is Black Science started this week, which is Rick Remender's new sci-fi book for Image.
It is not Trillium,
Trillium, no. And it's pretty good. It's kind of got, thematically, it's got a few similar sort of themes happening there as well. But it's good, old-school, swashbuckling sci-fi. I really like that. And of course, the new issue of Saga. Wonderful.
I haven't read it yet. I haven't had a chance.
We're getting up to that. Because remember a few issues back, there was like the issue where Prince Robot was downstairs in the lighthouse and they were hiding under thing. We're back up to the point where he's just arrived again.
Oh, goody.
So we're finally going to, the story's going to move forward again now. But it's been wonderful. That classic Vaughn motif of going, taking you here, let me go back a little bit.
Now
you can have your story. You know, and it's worked so well. It's kept you on the edge of your seat for the last
I'm looking forward to it. I've got it loaded up on my iPad. I just haven't had a chance to watch it. Read it yet.
Speaking of going back and looking at characters, side characters, The Walking Governor. I mean, The Walking Dead. Well, I've been hedging around which characters come back, but now that we're 3 weeks out of his reintroduction, the Governor is back in The Walking Dead. I know you're behind.
Remember, two weeks, and then we can go into spoilers on TV
shows.
So
he's back. We won't go into too many spoilers for the last episode that's just been on this week, although we're coming up to the mid-season break after the next episode, so we'll be able to talk about it a bit more over Christmas. But, you know, this is one of those things where I kind of thought, oh, God, the Governor's back. In the next episode, they kind of spent getting you to like him a little bit more by showing you what he'd been doing in between when he went between Woodbury and now. Sorry, every time I say Woodbury, I think of this one scene at the very end of one episode where they were trying to rally everybody together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As one person at the back who goes, yeah, Woodbury! So that's just kind of been a running gag in my head every time they mention Woodbury. But then now the governor finally showed his gubernatorial colours. Gubernatorial colours at the end of this recent episode. And you kind of think, yeah, that's the guy that I hate.
Yeah,
you know, and so,
and now he's actually resembling something that's cool.
Cool, yeah. So there's actually a reason for him to be back. And even though they said this season's going to be like much more like the comic book, no, it's not.
I'll tell you though. It's pretty good though. It's not like the comic book yet, but next season will, because it's amazing. The whole virus storyline is simply an excuse to cleanse everything that's crap. It's just let's just wash all the badness away.
Yep, absolutely.
So I bet you at the end of this season, all the bad characters are going to be dead. We're going to be left with only the interesting ones.
Yep.
And then next season will be...
I tend to agree.
Yeah.
I tend to agree. I think it's going to happen.
Because everything that happens just seems like we're only doing this just to clean the palate. You know?
Can we inject some kind of virus into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah.
Because this week was a marginal improvement, and it was a Melinda May episode.
I actually have to say, I quite liked this week's episode.
And it was good, but then at the end of it, you sit back and you think, what did we actually learn new? Nothing, really. Like, there was nothing. There's no forward progression of the story. It was just a bunch of cool stuff for the sake of it.
Mm.
And I liked the episode, but this episode, for some reason, the ratings shot back up to 9 million because they'd been steadily declining from 12 down to 6. Always been on a downward trend barring 1 week since the beginning, which is really worrying. Because it's like literally
but it
half.
Jumped back up
because this is the first week it hasn't had to contend with NCIS.
Right.
So I suspect when NCIS is back on the air, it will.
So they
drop
now
down
have a
again.
Few weeks to.
It actually came second to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which was a rerun.
Which has been rerunning since the 60s,
yes.
Hasn't it?
Yeah.
They now have a couple of weeks until NCIS comes back, basically, to build that rating.
Yeah.
So, and hopefully then maintain it.
Yeah.
Another series we saw this happen with, of course, was Deadwood. When Deadwood was on TV, it rated really well for its first 3 seasons. Then The Sopranos, which it followed, finished.
Yeah.
And it had to fly on its own, and it didn't. And that's why they canceled it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a shame because that's ever a show deserved to keep going.
It should have kept going. And look, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not terrible. It's just kind of bland.
Yeah.
And I was very disappointed there wasn't an Arrow this week to help wash out the palette.
I know, but we're getting an Arrow next week. Yeah. And,
although I got to tell you, isn't it funny how with the way we consume mass media that I got things mixed up a little bit because I was watching S.H.I.E.L.D. and I went, oh,
yes.
I went, Particle Accelerator. Oh, good. Barry Allen's guy. Wait, wrong show.
That's what that'd improve the ratings of both shows, I think.
Absolutely. Bring Barry Allen into S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, well, they need a superhero.
The other thing I watched this week, which we'll just throw out really quickly, is I watched the extended version of The
Wolverine. Yeah.
Which now it's on Blu-ray. We can give spoilers. And all I'll say is there isn't a lot different. There's one particular set piece that has been put back into it, obviously. Yeah. But most importantly, they've added blood. So, and two well-placed F-bombs. Really well-placed, including one in the interrogation scene where he throws a guy out the window.
Oh, okay.
So they've two well-placed F-bombs. But I have a question. So we have now have when he's slashing at people, we see blood and stuff like that. Not a lot, but a little bit, you know. My question is this. When he's lost his healing powers, for those who've seen it, you know, he's starting to lose his healing powers here. Every time he pops his claws out, why aren't his knuckles covered in blood?
I wondered this while I was watching it.
And why isn't that hurting like hell? You know what I mean? Because they wouldn't be healing up either.
There's no explanation for that at all.
The scene that they added, though, just to throw it in to give you an idea of what the extended version has, in the scene in the village at the end when it's all snowy and he gets hit with all the arrows and all the ropes and everything, there's a little sequence where Yukio shows up and she jumps into a snowplow with these huge blades on the front of it and basically drives through the ninjas, spraying the buildings in blood outside of the...
So that's a classic kind of Japanese sort of feel.
Yeah, it is.
It's what turned into a Takeshi Miike film.
And he starts there watching going, I don't remember that.
How amazing would that be if you're just watching the Wolverine and all of a sudden it does turn into 13 assassins. 25 minutes straight of just like utter destruction.
I will say that
that should be the third film right there.
Let's Let's pitch it. We'll just call it Wolverine Berserker.
Or Savage Wolverine. Yeah.
Trademark copyright.
Schnickney, schnickney, schnickney.
So I really still enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a second time around. I actually enjoyed the extended cut a lot more.
Okay.
Because adds a little bit of an edge
to it. I bought it this week, so I'm going to watch it tonight. Cool. Alrighty, it's time for some news headlines, and there's not huge amounts of great news this week, but we do have an exclusive, so if this is normally the part of the show where you just tune out because you're sick of hearing us, stick around for a little bit longer. So here we go. It's officially official. Marvel has announced that Elizabeth Olsen and Aaron Taylor-Johnson will be the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver in Avengers.
Age of Ultron!
Bob Weinstein is talking about developing a Sin City TV series following the release of the second film next year. Oh, dear.
Snickety, snickety. Mark Waid, Chris Somni, and Javier Rodriguez will return to Old Hornhead in March with a rebooted all-new Marvel Now Daredevil number one. I think there's one too many all news in there, and we can sleep at night again.
Following the end of his Aquaman run, Geoff Johns teases the Rise of the Seven Seas Justice League event for 2014.
Interesting.
I felt like a bit of seafood.
Matt Fraction and Joe Madureira's Inhuman number one has been delayed from January all the way until April 2014.
Oh. The covers for Marvel's Ghost Rider number one have been released, and it seems that the Flaming Skull guy has ditched the bike for a hot rod car.
Why not? Obviously, he needs something with a roofless thing. Otherwise, he's going to burn the roof of his car. The Powers team of Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Oeming will launch the United States of Murder, Inc. in spring 2014 for Marvel's Icon line.
Jamie Alexander, in her full Sif costume, paid a visit to the Los Angeles Children's Hospital this week, bringing gifts and taking the time for photographs and signatures with the kids. Yet another reason to love Jamie Alexander. I didn't need another reason.
The Universal Society for Hinduism has called for ABC and Disney to apologize after an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode. We're all calling for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to apologize. But after this episode suggested that Lord Vishnu was an alien.
Well, if Thor is an alien, then that just...
Well, there you go.
Yeah, it just evens out.
You know? He's an American.
They have been taking great pains to point out he's not a god, he's an alien. I think it's to appease the ABC overlords.
So so why aren't well, the Christians up in arms and everybody else? Because obviously if gods are aliens, they're all aliens.
No, you're just saying these gods are aliens.
What are you doing? Sorry, I'm just moving on the chair, man.
I thought there was like a child outside the door.
I thought it was my bones creaking.
it was the executives coming for us.
Well, David Anthony Longo, last week when you were away,
yes,
you were at the red carpet for Anchorman 2.
The glorious Anchorman 2. I'm not sure I can talk about it, but hey.
But you ended up interviewing Adam McKay, the director, and you asked him about the adaptation he was working on at one stage for The Boys.
Yeah, and if you look on the Wikipedia entry, it says that he's been working on The Boys for years. So I looked into it before when doing the research, and there's nothing asked directly to him. They've asked screenwriters, they've asked producers, but never to him. So getting the chance,
in which
I
case,
had to ask him.
This is an exclusive. Thank you, Mr. Longo.
Well, I fought the good fight. I made a beautiful previz. I made a fake trailer for it. I rewrote the script. I took it to every studio in town, and they were all afraid of it. And, you know, it's a rated R kind of meta movie. And I think because of The Watchmen, it kind of scared them a little bit. But my approach was not The Watchmen. My approach was going to be that this was going to be a rip-roaring, fun, badass superhero movie, except the superheroes were the guys who hunted the superheroes. And that was my idea, was it doesn't have to be. I mean, it was going to be darkish sometimes, but I just love the idea of who are the real heroes. I thought it was such an intriguing idea. But I think right now Hollywood's making so much money off of those superhero movies. I mean, they're making billions. The idea of a studio head saying, let's make a movie that destroys the whole idea of it was scary. So I didn't blame them for passing on it. The good news was Adam Goodman at Paramount did see the value of it. So they got the script and turn around. And when this movie's out, I'm going to go meet with the screenwriters again, and we're going to do another rewrite on it. So it's not completely dead. And I'm still dying to make that movie. I agree with you. I just think that movie would kick ass in kind of the way The Matrix kicked ass, you know, like kind of The Matrix / like Unbreakable. You know, if you combine those two movies, that's what I wanted to do with it.
Very, very cool. Thank you, Mr. Longo.
Yeah, that is freaking awesome.
So that is an exclusive to Behind the Panels. Mm. Thanks to this guy here, who you can't see that I'm pointing at.
And it's not on the website either.
So, oh, there you go. Yeah. So,
wow, that is really exclusive.
That's my gift.
Very exclusive. Stick around for Geek Movie Club this week, because there's another sound clip that Dave's brought in that we're playing on then for a different aspect of the interview.
We'll talk a little bit more about Adam McKay and stuff during that show as well.
But I mean, that's very, very cool. That's a bunch of exclusive sound clips you brought us this year. Yeah. So we really can't fire
Hopefully
you.
There'll be more.
That's why he keeps bringing them in. Don't fire me.
Well, now's the time of the episode I have been waiting for all week, because I'm very, very, very excited this week to be talking about one of my favorite books that I've ever read. one of the books that got me into comics a lot of way, which we'll talk about more in a minute. But this is time for the Kick-Ass Pick of the Week.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the Pick of the Week. Oliver Queen is alive. The problem is, he probably shouldn't be. Suddenly active again on the streets of Star City, the presumed dead Green Arrow struggles to find his place in the world and reconnect with his unconventional family and friends. Unable to account for his missing memories, the seemingly benevolent Stanley Dover may be the key to reviving his wayward soul. Released in 2001 by Kevin Smith and artists Phil Hester and Andy Parks, it firmly established the indie filmmaker as a strong storyteller in the world of comics and brought back a character we didn't know we missed. Targeting the funny bones, the heartstrings, and the action core in equal measures, this is Green Arrow, Quiver.
Nice use of the theme, dude. Nice use of... Okay, I'm going to applaud you on that.
It's Arrow, man. Of course I'm going to use the theme. Look, this is... As you probably know, I'm a Green Arrow fan. I don't know if I've mentioned this.
No.
Look, I've been a big Green Arrow fan for a long time, but this is the book that really got me into Green Arrow in a big way. And there's a couple of reasons for that. I'd been out of not reading comics for a few years. And I came back because I was a big Kevin Smith fan at the time. I still am a Kevin Smith fan, but I was...
He makes you angry, but like any sibling.
At the time, I was loving everything he did, you know. And he released Guardian Devil as a comic at this stage, which I love, that 8-issue Daredevil series, which we will definitely do at some stage in the future.
Yeah, I bought it now.
And this book came out a few years later, 2001, and I started reading it, and it's so rich with Green Arrow history that I wanted to go back and find out more about this character, because I'd missed a bunch of stuff in the years that I'd been away from comics. I sort of stopped reading regularly around 93, 94, something like that, and then came back to it for this. I'd picked up the odd trade here and there. And then this book came along, and it made you realize how rich and dense the DC universe was, which, again, is one of the reasons they rebooted the whole thing. But also how interesting this character was. Because unlike Batman, unlike Superman, he was just a guy. And I wanted to know more about this rich family of characters that were turning up in here.
Well, to be fair, Batman is just a guy.
Yeah, but he's a billionaire as well.
Well, so is he.
No, he wasn't at the time.
I'm saying, but he was.
He lost all of his money. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's something different about Batman. Batman's, you know, the dark guy that rules the night. This guy's like an outspoken, angry...
Well, Batman's got no sense of humor.
Exactly. This is kind of like the lighthearted... I mean, he was originally developed as a Batman clone. Mm. And I went back and found out all these things that, yes, he was originally a Batman
clone.
There's
a great line in this.
They reference this.
Where he actually says, what about the Arrow Cave? He goes, good God, man, have you never had
an original idea? Yeah. And so, like, you know, all that stuff. But then you go back and you read all the stuff. All these little characters pop up, like Eddie Fires and his son Connor and all that stuff. Like, where did this all come from? So to give you a bit of context where this book falls in the sort of overall Green Arrow history, in 1996, they killed off Oliver Queen. They'd been running a series for a few years. Chuck Dixon had been writing the series at this stage. And what had happened was that after Mike Grell's lengthy run, which was what really established Green Arrow as in his own solo title, Chuck Dixon took over and they started bringing in other superheroes into the thing because Mike Grell's run had been like the TV show. No capes, no powers, just him in the city protecting it. Very little reference to anything else that was happening outside it, which I like that they've done that with a TV series. But when you're in the DCU, you kind of want to bring in other people to play with, which is what Chuck Dixon did in a big way. But they ended up bringing in this character of the Sun and slowly winding up the fact that, as they reference in this book, that his life was kind of spiraling out of control. And he was given the ultimate decision where he had his arm stuck in a bomb and the plane was going to explode. Superman could slice his arm off. He said, well, what good's an archer without an arm? I'm going down with a plane. And the plane exploded. That was Oliver Queen gone. And, you know, comic book death, you think, how long's that going to last? It lasted from 1996 through to 2001, which is a fairly long time for a character to be gone. In that in-between time, you had his son, Connor Hawke, taking on the mantle. He had some retro stories, but this was... And the intention apparently was never to wait that long. They were going to bring it back. Chuck Dixon was going to bring him back 2 years later, but that fell through. And all these sort of things, you know, all those editorial decisions that stop things from happening.
And during that time as well, didn't we have... because there's allusions to the arm being cut off in Dark Knight Returns.
That was before. That was a long time ago.
That's interesting. So that he was thinking in advance of that? Or?
I don't know. It's kind of one of those weird sort of synchronous moments because Dark Knight Returns was 1986.
That's true.
So 10 years before. And
it's almost like Frank Miller said, you have to do this.
Yeah, and so it's kind of like one of those self-perpetuating prophecies that it's sort of... But so maybe in an alternate universe somewhere, he did sacrifice his arm and it was Superman that took it off. Mm. So,
but that's such a powerful thing, isn't it? What is an archer without
his
arm?
Mm. Yeah. And so what they do is when he comes back in this series, he's back. He first turns up as a hobo and then suddenly he is Green Arrow.
Which can I just say is my favorite picture in the entire book.
It's
that
terrific
one splash page of him in all the canvases and the bleach bottle on the end of on the end of the arrow, the huge beard. You just go, that's awesome.
And he's like, what's the matter? You've seen a ghost?
Yeah.
and the great thing about this is that when he comes back, he is, and the last Green Arrow, well, not the last Green Arrow book we did, but one of the Green Arrow books we've done before was the classic 1970s run with Green Lantern. And this is the character that comes back in this is very much that character.
Mm.
And in fact, he has no memories of anything much beyond when he just returned from that hard traveling time.
In fact, there's one of the issues is called Hard Traveling
Heroes. Yeah. And basically, long story short, as we discover throughout this book, and remember, spoilers and all, people, if you haven't read this yet, definitely go and read it. But the story is that Hal Jordan, who is now the Spectre at this stage in DC history, has brought, which is a godlike creature, for those of you who don't know
he
DC.
He works for God.
He works for God. Yeah. He is almost a deity himself. Almost a deity. Remember that, people who were complaining? The Society for Superhero Deities. And he's brought back Green Arrow to try and recapture the best part of both of their lives.
So we should say he works for a god.
A god. Yeah, not the god. Not, he works for
whatever,
a god.
Whatever your belief is.
It is, yeah. He works for that god. And, you know, he tries to bring back, tries to save himself as well as Ollie, because Ollie at this stage had, you know, cheated on Dinah. He'd killed somebody and never really got over that. There was all this sort of stuff. So he tried to make him the best possible Ollie that he remembered. So it was the hot-headed 1970s one. And part of that's an excuse for Kevin Smith to play with the 1970s version of Green Arrow. And like you said to me before the show, David, the first half of this book is very much about playing around with that character in the modern DCU. Mm. And the second half shifts and gets into the point where we start talking about how are we going to now reestablish him into the DCU? What does it mean?
And how do we make sense of the fact that he's back?
Back. And also really gets, not laden, but really starts getting infused with all that Catholic stuff that Green Arrow that Kevin Smith so often plays with. He played with it in Guardian Devil, certainly in Dogma and a few other of his films as well. The idea that what is a man without a soul? You know, what is, you know, how do I, you know, demons and angels and all that kind of stuff. So really, really fascinating book on that level. Really, really personal book to me because it got me back into comics, got me into Green Arrow in a big way. What do you guys think of it?
Okay, first of all, I think the first half, I've read this book twice. So I read this book about 6 to 8 months ago. My first Kevin Smith book was actually not this. My first Kevin Smith book was Green Hornet because I had never read his comic book stuff. And so I picked up his run of Green Hornet, which was what was he was going to do as a film before he fell out with all that. And I quite liked that. And I thought, he's actually got a pretty good voice for comic books. I then read his $6 Million Man. And I thought, that's interesting as well. I think he had
The Bionic Man.
The Bionic Man, the Bionic Man, his reboot of The Bionic Man. And I thought, he's got a really interesting voice. So I thought, I'm going to go back and look at some of that early Smith. And I picked up Cacophony. Mm. And I read Cacophony. And then we did that for the show. And then I read Widening Gyre, Part 1, which I really enjoyed as well.
Which is a sequel to Cacophony.
Which is a sequel to Cacophony, and we're waiting for the Part 3 to this whole thing coming up soon. And then it's time to go back. So I've now got a copy of Daredevil, Guardian Devil, and I wanted to read Quiver because knowing you and your obsession with Green Arrow, I thought I had to look at this. And I loved it. I got to say, I loved it. I loved this book. Is a great 10 issues. It's a great solid 10 issues. I think the first half is more solid than the second half. And I think it's purely because
There's
a big tonal difference. Yeah. I think the first half is really fun, and it's this really interesting juxtaposition of the 70s Green Arrow coming into the modern world and how they actually deal with that, with the old man basically redoing his entire brownstone with old equipment.
Well, it's all about the dialogue between the characters in the first half. Yeah, and I love the fact that, the brownstone's just filled with, like, 1980s computers.
Oh, he picks up a cell phone at one point and goes, oh, who's this walkie-talkie talking to?
It's like, you must be a supervillain to have this kind of technology.
he goes, I can talk to anybody in the world. Really?
Who do you think you are, Batman?
And I cannot read this without hearing the Green Arrow from the 60s cartoon. Play it for me, Richard.
I'll play it for you. Here we go.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
Absolutely. And that is the voice you hear when you read this. The dialogue is perfect.
You almost said, when he starts working out what's going on, you can almost hear him going,
by Robin Hood's bow.
Absolutely. And every time I was reading something, it's like, hey there, pretty bird.
And that's like such a great scene too. But
it's wonderful. But I think the second half, although I really like it, and although I think it's a completely plausible way of bringing back Green Arrow, and I think he was very clever on the idea of the hollow shell. He's very, very clever to bring back blood as a character. He really likes Etrigan, because this is his second. In fact, this would have been his first.
This is his first work for DC.
But he's actually had Etrigan the Demon twice now, because he's also in The Widening Gyre.
Yes.
So he really likes that character. He must love writing the poetry because he speaks in rhyme. But I think the second half feels a little bit rushed.
Yeah,
It's a really big thing that he's writing, and we managed to resolve it in 2 issues.
It's Hickman big,
and basically it's all with pretty much the villain giving his huge speech at the end, which is basically an issue where he just runs down the entire plane. And then the final issue is really like, I think it's summed up by one sound effect, actually, where it just goes pop.
Yeah.
And it's done.
It's,
you know,
funny you should say that, because I don't disagree with you, because I think that the second half isn't the same as the first half. It's a very different feel. And yeah. I also think that it is a little rushed towards the end. He possibly could have introduced those concepts a lot earlier because he was having so much fun.
And I think that's what he needed to do.
Playing with the thing. I mean, playing with the wider DC universe, playing with, you know, introducing Ollie to all these characters. Because he clearly wanted, this is his first DC book, so he clearly wanted to always write something about Aquaman and have a few Batman scenes in there as well.
And there's a very famous story. We've talked about it on the show before, so I won't go into detail, but there was a very famous story, which was he was at a party with comics creators and he went to the creators of Green Arrow and actually said to them point blank, if you ever want to make Green Arrow a number one book again, give me a call.
Yeah.
So he was really cocky about this. I mean, yeah. He really obviously knew that he had something.
Yeah, and the thing is, there's clearly a lot of love and a lot of history for the characters in here as well. Mm. He obviously loves the DCU.
Which we know from his Batman obsession.
Exactly. And that's the thing. And sometimes his book borders on a Batman issue sometimes because you've got a lot of Batman stuff in there because it opens with Batman investigating Green Arrow's reappearance and stuff like that. So he's obviously trying to write a lot of things at once.
This also would have been his first Batman.
It would have been his first Batman.
And he
book.
Loves Batman so much. This is why he's really.
But, and the great thing about it, he doesn't mind making fun of it. What struck me as weird, and I didn't notice it the first time I watched it because I was a big, as I said, watching a lot of Kevin Smith films at the time, however many there were in 2001, well, I guess five. You know, he does a lot, you know, it's his typical humor. There's a lot of dick jokes in here, let's face it.
Yeah, and he borders, you know, on, he borders on crass a few times.
There's, you know, and there's also things like he's often, there's a lot of jokes about, hey, man, I know you like me shirtless, but I'm not gay. And at least in the first three or four issues, he makes that same gag with different characters about three or four different times. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, you could almost, and I'm not saying he is, because he's clearly not, because he's won lots of GLAAD awards, but it's kind of like almost, it borders on homophobic humor.
It's not just homophobic, you know. I mean, it's not just a homosexual humor. There's a sexual innuendo about
exactly,
a lot
to everyone,
of stuff. And there's, what's his name again? Dover? When Dover.
Yeah.
When Stanley Dover, at the end, he basically says, first I'm going to get into your body and then I'm going to get into hers, if you know what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? There's a lot of that sort of innuendo. Dave, we haven't heard from you yet.
But the defense towards that is that they're coming out of characters' mouths that are bad people.
Yeah,
they're not coming out of good.
Not always.
To be fair to the book, though, like the character of Mia, I think her name's Mia. She's a very good female character. Like on that other side, there is a lot of, that's a Kevin Smith trademark as well. Like strong female characters, and
I'm not towards that. Perhaps it's reading them all so close together, but I did notice that motif occurring a lot throughout it. I mean, there's but I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing, and I agree with you.
I don't disagree with you though,
and I think that's a really good point you raised.
I just want to make it more balanced. That's all.
No, I think, but I think that you might raise.
And I don't necessarily think it's bad that he's doing this as well. Don't get me wrong. Some of it is quite funny. And some of it works really well.
I'm just commenting on it.
Yeah,
I just noticed that there's a lot of it. But what I think you raised a really good point. There's a strong female characters in there as well, and I think Mia was one of his strongest introductions because she goes on under Judd Winnick, much later on in this run. She goes on with this whole storyline about she's actually got HIV because she'd been working on the streets for quite some time. She gets HIV and her dealing with that and how the other team members deal with it and people at school deal with it, and she's quite open and honest about it, and she becomes Speedy ultimately much later in the
run. Well, you can see the hints of that when she's trying to use the bow on the rooftop.
Yeah.
How hard can it be?
Yeah. So, I mean, but I think he plants all the seeds here. Green Arrow ran for 75 issues, I think, in this initial run, and so much of the stuff that Kevin Smith planted here winds up in the mouths of, you know, Brad Meltzer and Judd Winnick and all these other people who took over it, and even J.T. Kroll, who did the last few issues before the reboot, before the New 52 stuff. I think that he's done, DC does owe Kevin Smith a big debt for doing exactly what you said, Dave, which was, you know, making it a number one book again.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, back in 2001, I intimated as much in the intro, we didn't realize we missed this character until we brought him back.
And DC obviously killed him for a reason.
Yeah.
It was obviously not selling. There was nothing
And they replaced
happening.
Him with a kid.
Yeah, and they replaced him with a kid. It was like, okay, let's get rid of that character. Let's write one off. I mean, he went the way of Grifter.
Yeah.
You know?
There's this theory going around that if you get a comic book geek to write a comic book, that it will be good. you know, like, yeah. And I think that's what's happened here, and it's what happened with, you know, Joss Whedon's comic books.
Yeah.
It's like, that's kind of the first thing I like about it.
Okay, you know, the only one we haven't heard from yet, so give us your rundown.
I guess the first thing that I should say is that I'm massively biased towards Kevin Smith. Like, for me, he rarely put a foot
wrong. And for anybody who's listened to the show, we know.
Yeah. Especially back then, because I was like, you know, 11, 12 when I discovered Kevin Smith. He's kind of that and Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movie.
You're feeling old, David?
but you know, you guys are as young as you feel, right? If you feel young, yeah. But like when Spider-Man the movie came out and Kevin Smith, like I discovered Kevin Smith through Morats and things like that, like that's sort of like my comic book development stage. So when you say your first comic book from Kevin Smith was... What was it, Dave, you said?
Bionic
Man.
No, the other one, Green Hornet.
That's amazing. I just hadn't
read any Kevin Smith up until that point.
Because Kevin Smith was almost my gateway into comic books.
Kevin Smith wasn't writing the books that I was reading.
And he was my gateway back into comic books as well.
Well, totally. For me, it's like, oh, hell, there's some more Clerks stories in comic books.
That's right.
That's how I got into comics.
Do you know what my gateway, did you want to say feel old? My gateway into comic books was Chris Claremont. That was my gateway into comics. And then my return into comics was Brian Michael Bendis.
Ah,
well, so those are the two people who were my gateways.
You mean Brian Michelle Bendis.
That's the one. Yes.
But in my circles at that time when I was young, there was still definitely a stigma around comic books and that kind of medium.
Yeah.
But you know, Spider-Man the movie and Mallrats in particular, like Brody, the character of Brody, like... Such a cool person that read comics. Like,
read
comics.
Well, it has that great line, and I think I can drop this word on this show. Just because a guy reads comic
don't
books
if you need to.
Doesn't mean that he can't start some stuff.
Yeah. But anyway, I never read Quiver because it was, to me, the DC Universe was a little bit impenetrable at that stage beyond Batman and Superman. Like, all I kind of knew was Marvel.
You and me, Marvel boys.
It still is, though.
And I have a vague memory of like trying to crack this like way back, you know, and just not getting past like half an issue. Kind of like, I can't understand what's going on here. But I'm glad now in the intervening years, like especially coming here to this show and, you know, watching Arrow the show and speaking to you, Richard, about Arrow and reading things like...
I mention it occasionally.
Yeah, well, like the Longbow Hunters Richard introduced to me, which is like an amazing comic book.
Wonderful book.
You know, and like for me, like to be honest, like I probably would have like raised my nose at Green Arrow like 5 years ago.
I think
ago.
A lot of people do. That's the issue.
And now like I totally am on board your side. I think the character is amazing.
But to be fair though, in the Marvel side, we all raised our noses and kind of still do it. Hawkeye.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Yes, Hawkeye is a really stupid character. Matt Fraction has made him cool.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? But up until then, the Hawkeye was like, really?
Because when you think about Hawkeye, you think Hawkeye is a copy of a character that no one really outside of comics cared about, you know?
Hawkeye was a ripoff of a character who DC had so little faith they killed him.
Well, see, Green Arrow is one of those characters where it's like throughout history, he's had some of the best people working on him and had some of the most seminal comics. Like the 1970s run with Neil Adams and Denny O'Neil.
Mm.
One of the most reprinted books ever because of all the relevant comics. It was kind of the forefront of the relevant comics movement because of the whole, you know...
We're talking about Green Lantern, Green Arrow.
Yeah, because it was talking about racism and talking about social injustice and government corruption.
And if
you
haven't read these, Dave, these are... You need to go back and read them.
I mean, I've read some of them, like, only over the last year and a half, though.
Right.
You know, like, since actually getting into the New 52 and getting into the DC Universe, what it was like before and reading the big events. And that's kind of what I was getting at, like... Having done that and being such a Kevin Smith fan, this book is just like, it's just brilliant. It's just like, it pleases the fan in you on every level. I mean, how can you not like it? It's like,
And I got to say, just to add to that, that he did it again, Arrow, I should say, did it again, like, you know, in the 80s with Mike Grell. That was like one of the first mature readers books in the main DCU line as well. And because it was a tough, brutal, you know, in the first couple of issues in the Longbow Hunters, Black Canary, who they're both trying to live a normal life in Seattle. They've moved to Seattle to get away from it. So it's a real world place. They've moved there, and they allude to that in this book as well.
No, she's quizzing him. She's going, Seattle?
Nope. So there's a great sequence in here. But that, you know, and the fact that that was a mature reader's book, and it got a major... It was a great creator... It was the closest thing to a creator-owned book in the main DCU. You know, and, you know, Mike Grell went on and did Warlord and all those kind of things, but... It was a wonderful, just self-sustaining book that lasted 80 issues. And then the character, like all characters, kind of fell out of favor, and this book sort of brought it back in. One thing we haven't talked about, because now that we're mentioning Kevin Smith, and we all said this before the show, was how dialogue heavy this is.
Yeah, and look, and that's one of Kevin Smith's strengths and weaknesses as a writer. It's the same problem that Brian Michelle Bendis has,
yeah.
which is that they are,
as he shall forever be known now,
they are incredibly dialogue heavy. They are obviously coming from screenwriting backgrounds. Brian Michael Bendis has admitted to that. We know Kevin Smith is a screenwriter,
and they don't
think visually. What they do is they write words and then give it to an artist and say, here, flesh this out, you know? And what was it you said? There was a quote where the artist would basically say, there's no room for us to draw
Dave
a picture.
Saying
you
know? That before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, so, but that being said, his dialogue is phenomenal. And so when you're reading it, you don't mind the fact. I was actually saying to Richard before the show, I read this a while ago. I thought I'm going to just glance over it really quickly for the show today. So just refresh my memory, you know, of all the events. And I started writing it. I could
make this better.
I started to read it again. And
on top of the panels.
and I had forgotten how dense the words were. And it ended up taking me hours to reread it because not only is it dense to read, but as soon as you start reading it, you want to delve into
those
words. That's
exactly my feeling. You know? Like, you know, you turn the page and you're like, oh,
you go, oh,
no.
Look at all this work. But it's
and then
so
you, then,
tasty.
Then you read like a bubble and you're like, oh, man. Like,
it's a morsel gold. And you want to chew on it.
And there's
a
brilliant moment in it where I think Kevin Smith gets self-referential about how much dialogue there is in there and how kind of it is.
Oh, yes.
With Batman, the impossible sentence.
How long? I bet he's been looking at the corner for hours.
Did you guys sit there and try and read it out loud for a...
I
tried a few times. That was awesome.
If Richard can find it, he's going to read it for us.
Please read it, Richard.
Here we go.
Here we go, everybody.
Here we go. It said, Wonder Woman asked him, how long have you been skulking here? And he says, long enough to hear that none of you could get past your cartoony slack-jawed dumbfoundedness over the situation and secure any answers as to why a man who we all know is dead walks around articulating like a walking anachronism. Catch. And then Green Lantern says, that is by far the most complex sentence I've ever heard anyone utter. And then Flash responds with, $10 said he's been hiding in the shadows for the last hour just so we could come up with a lot, put down that classy. And then I think on the next page he says, you know, when Superman says, where do you think you're going with him? To get some answers. Based on his roundings, I think an analysis better served far from you people in the Watchtower. Don't you agree? I'll forward whatever conclusions I can draw. And for the record, Wally, I came with that mouthful of words off the top of my head. You know? It's great, yeah, because it is... and that's like midway through the series. It's probably Kevin Smith responding directly.
Yeah.
Because
if they're coming out monthly, he's probably sort of... Because it is his first comic book.
Yeah.
Right?
And he was always late as well.
In those days, he was notorious. In fact, I think...
I remember Daredevil, The Target, Can We...
I was...
Cause that,
did that when finish?
No, it never did. He only did one. And Spider-Man, The Evil That Men Do.
That's right. Yeah.
They never finished.
That's why he left Marvel. That's why he went to DC. He wasn't going to finish.
And that was
Marvel
when Green Hornet came out from Dynamite. Yeah. There was actually a splash on the front page. It said, "All issues already written."
Yeah. They need to put that on the next issue of the Batman Cacophony. On
But he's such a brilliant writer, though, and it shows, especially back then. It's kind of a little bit, I guess, a bit of a shame what's happening lately, but. You know, whatever. Kevin Smith was just a brilliant...
And he was clearly having fun with it. Cause
still
he,
is, in my opinion.
Well, he actually stuck around
I just wish he would actually write instead of talking.
Talking, yeah. I mean, he actually stuck around for 5 issues after that. Quickly, because we're running out of time, I just want to quickly mention the art.
Yes.
Phil Hester and Andy Parks did the art on this. Again, it's one of those things, coming back to books, and it's like, oh, that's what comic books look like now. You know, and I was really impressed. And it's kind of an art style that is not for everybody. But it really suits the material because it was able to juggle that line between the cartoonish for the first half of it and then really dark, and particularly when you get to a monster, David.
Yes, I was going to say, so spoilers and all for this, one of the things that I couldn't help shaking, and I didn't mind it. I thought it was actually quite cute. But the big demon that turns up at the end, who is the Spot for the boy, I couldn't help noticing that there might be a resemblance to Scully from Monsters Incorporated.
Yeah.
Wrong color, of course, but the whole mannerisms of him and how he's really polite and he was in the closet. You know, all this, obviously, he's wait a minute, have we just crossed over into a completely different book here?
No, it's great. I mean, look, I love this book, and I think it's a really great spot. Unfortunately, it reminds you of how many characters no longer exist in the DCU, thanks to the New 52.
Mm.
Whole storylines with his son Connor and with you know, Mia and Eddie.
Can I just mention something quickly? Just popped in my head when you mentioned Connor, that the pacing, like complaining about the... I actually think it's paced really well. In terms of first half and second half. Because the first half deals with him being very self-obsessed. Like, you know, no, yes, I'm in denial. Everything is the way it is. And it's through, you know, coming together with his family. First, it's his superhero family. And then ultimately, in conclusion, his own family.
I had no
problem. That's kind of what makes it paced well
and
for
also
me.
Think
I just,
about...
I had no problem with any of that. No, it's not. But I had a problem with the main plot lines pacing. Mm. Yeah. So we go from Stanley Dover being little bumbling.
This
little
is the
man,
one thing. Did you guys
all the way through it? Until remember, the second last issue.
This is over the course of a year, and not in the after the night before that you read it. You
granted,
know,
just, but just as a story, when you actually look at that story, you sit there and go, I think personally, had they revealed that Stanley Dover was not quite what he was by issue 5.
Yeah.
But didn't reveal it to any of the other characters. That is actually more terrifying when he's alone in the house with Mia, because you're sitting there the whole time going, is he going to do something?
You know what I mean? Yeah.
But for them to play him as the bumbling little old man right until the very end, and then suddenly give us an issue of dialogue saying, oh, by the way, I'm actually a bad guy, and these are my sharks with freaking laser beams.
I agree. I didn't like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's the one thing,
The character stuff with Green Arrow, that is all fine. Mm. I'm just talking about that main storyline, how the 10 issues are getting to, which is how did he get back?
What was that thing
that
from,
was rushed at the end?
From Trinity War? The butler did it.
The butler did it, exactly, yeah. So Kevin Smith was writing the Trinity War years before it happened. Look, I think we can all safely say that, plot quibbles aside, we all enjoy this
story. It's a great book.
And it's a great book, and if you're looking for a great Green Arrow story or a great DC story, this is the one.
This is Comics 101.
I agree.
David, girl from Ipanema, hit her up.
Oh.
Because we have a lot of feedback this week. First of all, we're going to draw our Man of Steel competition in just a moment.
Does anybody actually want it?
Apparently, no. Nobody wanted it. But I'll take it. But what we wanted to let you know is some of the feedback that we got. We asked you to put some feedback on our iTunes. We still love to do that. If you want to look us up on iTunes behind the panels, just go and have a look and leave us a star rating or a review. And about 4 of you have left reviews this week. So thank you so much. And another one of you just left a star rating. So fantastic. One of these ones, so here we go. This is Awesomely Fun Time, 5 stars by Collider25.
Excellent.
Collider25 says, comic books and films, a laugh a minute, like a roller coaster, yet there are only ups and no downs. have been listening and following the website for a while and never miss out on a podcast. Keep up the great work, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Comics Podcasting 101, 5 stars by Sneezy Badger. Sneezy says, as someone who hasn't read many comics, this has been my way in to the worlds of Marvel.
I love hearing that.
Yeah. And this is exactly what the show's about.
Yeah.
To the worlds of Marvel, DC, and the independents. If it happens in the world of comics, David, Richard, and occasionally Dave, talk about it and make it funny. The pick of the week is a great way to discover the classics as well as some new series to watch. It's exactly what we want to hear. Keep up the good work, gents. The next one, finds a balance, informative and entertaining. 5 stars by Patrick P77. With so many podcasts, reviews and websites and blogs running a commentary on comics, films, games and pop culture, it's hard to find something that is wholly unique and high quality, yet without the all too common pretentious opinions. This has to be one of the finds the balance between the humour and stays on topic. Well done, guys.
Wow.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Now, I want to contribute this all to Richard. He keeps us on topic.
Agreed.
It's the bullwhip behind the scenes.
Finally, I should say I didn't write this one. This one comes
I really love Richard.
Yes, it does. This one comes from
Mrs. Gray.
This one comes from, yes, probably from my mum. This probably comes from Myth Fanatic. This is from Myth Fanatic, so it's probably from one of our Melbourne viewers. It says, always great stuff, another 5-star review. Having read Richard Gray's film reviews for years, I listened to the man talk about sawdust manufacturing. Articulate, intelligent, funny stuff. I recommend it highly.
I agree, but next week we're going to talk about sawdust manufacturing.
Actually, this person is aware.
By Kevin Smith.
This person is aware there's two other people here, right?
Yeah, but I'm the one that talks about Sawdust Man.
Ah, okay. There you
He's
go.
The one that's been doing reviews.
I'm
reviews
on topic.
For years.
All right, keeping okay. on topic.
Keeping on topic.
Superman.
Man of Steel. We ran a competition. We could win two people could win copies of Man of Steel on Blu-ray, as well as a copy of the Superman, Man of Steel, the early years.
And a bumper sticker.
And a bumper sticker and a badge or whatever.
I still haven't found the badges. Don't promise that one.
And a sealed envelope with a kiss.
I found the bumper stickers. I haven't found the badges. Don't promise
you'll
the badges.
Get something behind the panels, Ryan. We received.
Can you put lipstick on and kiss?
We got a bunch of feedback. Of course, we got something from Mike from Canada, who said, "Why would I want to rewatch Man of Steel?" The question, of course, was, "Why should we watch it a second time?" He said, "Why would I want to rewatch Man of Steel? It's a pile of destruction that makes a 10-year-old squeal. If liking Man of Steel is a crime, then call the police. It's not any worse than The Quest for Peace. I'd even say that it's better than the third Shrek, even if Soup snaps Zod's neck." Did I give it away, the ending, dear listener? Are you hurt? But it's been over 2 weeks, so no spoiler alert is required. I read that very quickly, but I think it was poetry. Mike from Canada, you've just won yourself a prize!
Hey,
our first international giveaway. Our second prize goes.
If you get stopped at customs, it's not our problem.
Yeah, exactly. You can't bring in this.
We're arresting you because you like Men of Steel.
Our second winner is Judith Maunders, who has a very special reason.
Wait a minute, is that a girl?
Yeah, it is. We have a girl. We actually have two girls. I'll read out the other one in a moment.
Wow, we have female listeners.
I'm as surprised as you, David. you know why? I think it's because of that Richard Gray who talks about sawdust.
Well, with the liquid candy voice, right?
It's fruity like jam.
It's smooth as well.
They read comic books too, guys.
Man of Steel is worth... We're going to lose them now.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
At least they can't see what
I'm
looking
like. Hang on. We love you, ladies.
We've definitely lost them now.
Yeah, ladies. Join us next week for Spider-Allen.
Man of Steel is worth watching a second time for Henry Cavill and the red pantsless Superman. Oh, there's a demographic. No, it's not nudity. It's actually a pleasurable experience to view Henry Cavill in blue and his lower half and no red underwear over the top of the Superman package. So that, for that reason, you definitely deserve a Man of Steel.
I will say that I think Henry Cavill is pretty dreamy.
We've actually also got something here from another person, Jade O'Shea. That sounds like two female listeners.
It does.
Jade says, "Unfortunately, Jade, you didn't win, but we thought we'd read out your feedback here because it's very cool. Like most, I was disappointed on the first viewing. I thought it was as much fun as Trainwreck as Kanye's new video clip. But after watching it again, I've decided it would have been better as an animated film." Goes on to say that it's the best live-action Superman so far. People thought it would be similar to Dark Knight Trilogy, but as we've all said on the show, she said she's more than willing to take it off her hands. Unfortunately, you didn't win this week, but... you know what the hell? I've got a spare copy. Jade, you can have a spare copy.
You give me away your copy, are you?
No. I actually had a spare copy that I was going to give to one of you guys, but
you
already bought it. So, Jade, you've got a copy too.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
You don't get the extra stuff, but you get this. Well, I just liking your thing. It's plus
Jade, because you're like our second female listener, I'm going to send you a bumper sticker too.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, look under your chairs. You've all got a car. goes on to say, so please gimme, and keep up the good work. Well, I can't say no. You're going to get a copy now. Unfortunately, I don't have a fourth copy, so Mitchell Deacon, you're missing out. But Mitchell, keep listening next week because I am going to read out your full feedback because you actually go on and make a few points about things we can do on the show. And I'm going to save that till next week's show feedback.
Because is like a book.
It is a very long email. But
and we have to go through an added table.
And we really appreciate you sending that in. But and we'll send you something in the post too. We'll send you a sticker or something just to thank you for listening. And if I get anything else... I'll stick that in the post as well. But I definitely
Funnily
want to read
enough,
out
I
your
think,
feedback
I
next
think
week.
I actually may have something that we can also send Jade as well. We'll keep it as a surprise for
you. Ooh, okay. Well, there you go. Fantastic. Well, that's it for a show, gents. Next week, we're doing David McVeigh's pick, which is...
Spider Island.
Power
Spider
Girl! Yes!
Yeah, Spider Island. No.
It's the Amanda Connor, Palmiotti run of Power Girl, first 12 issues of that stellar run. We do encourage you to read all 20-odd issues of the run, which was taken over by Judd Winnick after they left, because it is a complete story, but we are only doing for the show the first 12.
Which is the Amanda Connor art.
Yeah.
But there are, as you said, there's 27 issues.
This is... Put on your laughing gear, people. This is some fun stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm so
excited
for it.
I haven't dipped into this one yet, so I'm really looking forward to it. So... that'll be next week's pick, and then sometime between now and then, you, Mr. Longo, have to decide.
we were discussing before, but we haven't finalized it yet.
So, looking forward to whatever you come up with next week. So that will be revealed next week too.
Yep.
And until then, Where can we find us on the interwebs? I can be found on therealbits.com, on Twitter at DVDBits, where I'm talking a lot about Doctor Who, and of course on behindthepanels.net as well.
You can find me on geekactually.com, which is actually the home of all the podcasts, and will soon be being redesigned, but that's been delayed just a little bit because of a possible move coming up, but we'll go into that in more detail as time comes on. You can also find me at Twitter, at David McVeigh.
You can find me at www.damngoodcup.com, which is now recently redesigned. Have
looking
a look.
Good.
And at Twitter, at Dave Longo.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. So until next week, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
Dave Longo.
And this is Behind the Panels.